So, and what I learned from interviewing all these people is that they had, by and large, growth mindsets, or they were actively and consciously always trying to work on their growth mindset. It's not to say they're always a growth mindset. I would say most of them, like everyone else, they were fixed forever. But then they started to learn all these things that we learn as along the entrepreneurial journey and through making mistakes. And you start to pick up certain things and you start to realize, actually, if I'm going to last at this, I need to learn how to fail. I need to learn how to overcome adversity. I need to learn how to get better at something.
Hello, and welcome to The Dad Train, where we explore ideas and strategies on how to be a better man, a better partner, and a better dad. I'm your host, Scott Davison. I hope you enjoy this episode and learn something new. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dad Train podcast. Today, I'm going to be chatting with British author and entrepreneur Matthew Turner. Matthew lives in a small town in Yorkshire, and he goes by the name of Turndog. So you can check him out at turndog.co. He's got a very interesting background, which we'll learn more about today. Most of the books he's published are actually fiction novels. However, he's also written a business book where he's interviewed a bunch of successful entrepreneurs from all around the world and discovered some of the common traits with regards to their mindsets and, in particular, how they approach failure. The book is called Successful Mistake: Tips, Tricks, and Tales from 163 Successful Entrepreneurs. And now here's the author of that book, Matthew Turner. Welcome to the Dad Train.
Thank you. Real pleasure to be here with you and your fine people.
Yes, no, thank you for joining us all the way from Yorkshire. So, small town in Yorkshire. How small is this town we're talking about? Will we have heard of it?
I don't know. It's called Halifax. We have one of the bigger banks in England. So anyone who's maybe come to England, they might have seen the Halifax Bank that obviously originated here as a building society. That's really what we're, I suppose, famous for, a bank, which isn't great. And it's fairly small. Yep. 110,000, maybe, around, give or take. So, we're in the sort of hills, the Pennines in Yorkshire, fairly close to the Yorkshire-Lancashire border. So lots of greenery, lots of hills, which is good for running and cycling and all that kind of stuff. Very, very cold and wet at the moment because, it's obviously the perfect time of year for you.
That's right. We're midsummer here, evening here, and cold winter's morning for you over there. So thanks for joining us. I hope you've got a cup of tea or something to keep you company there.
I've got my coffee, yes.
Fantastic. So I want to talk a bit about your background because most people won't have read your books unless they're into that type of fiction. But what is your what is your background, both from a professional point of view and a bit of your life background as well?
Yeah, good question. So I think when I tell people I'm a writer, they assume I probably went to university to study English or language. I was an avid book reader growing up. And the truth is I wasn't. I wasn't much of a reader growing up. I would read when I have to. English certainly wasn't my favorite subject. I always struggled with English a lot of the times because I did have a bit of a speech issue growing up. Always struggled with like grammar and things of that nature. So I was always good at storytelling. I always had an imagination, but I always associated English and writing with spelling and grammar and having neat handwriting, which wasn't anything I was ever particularly good at. So no real background in writing other than I had a wild imagination. But then after a pretty rough breakup around about 21, I just started to write as a form of therapy. And that spun into my first novel, Beyond Parallel. And a love of writing kind of unraveled thereafter, really. And I started to just write and write more and write more, more, more. Practice my crafts and got to a stage where I wasn't a terrible writer. And along the way, that my passion for writing kind of joined alongside my marketing background, which is what I did school at, did study at school. And that's kind of when I started writing The Success Mistake, which is one of the books you mentioned earlier. And these days, my client work is all about ghostwriting. So everything I do today is centered around writing and content, either for myself or for other people. So it's quite strange looking back over the last 15 years, because if you'd have spoken to 19, 20-year-old me and said I would become a writer, he would have just said, no way.
Yeah.
But bit by bit, it's evolved that way, and that's how life has turned out for me.
That's awesome. It's an amazing story. And what about on the family side? I know you're a father. So you're sort of mid-30s now, are you? And what's your family situation?
Yes. Mid-30s. Two kids with two different mums, which keeps things interesting. My son actually today turns 8. So it's his 8th birthday today. Wow. So I'll be giving him a call in probably a couple of hours. We had a nice sort of family birthday weekend, but I'll be calling him and seeing how he is. So he's 8. And then my youngest Imogen turned 3 just like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So 5 years apart. And yeah, it's crazy to think, because George coming into the world very much coincided with me leaving my job and starting to work for myself. The two began separate. I left my job, started working for myself, not knowing George was going to be of this world. Shortly after, learned he was. And yeah, it kind of like changed, as you know, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, it changes everything. The whole sort of mindset, your approach, how you go about living, both in terms of your work, but also your own sort of personal growth and plan for the future and trying to be present for now. So my, you know, quote unquote entrepreneurial journey and George's journey basically started at the same time. And I published Beyond Parallel. It was about 7 or 8 years after I first started it, because as I talked about earlier, it was an evolutionary organic process, which kind of spurned many years. He was probably only a few months old when I actually published that book. So yeah, the kind of the work that I do today and a lot of my writing today, very closely intertwined with George's life.
Interesting. Those two big changes happening around the same time. I know you've done a lot of work and a lot of thinking around that challenge of sort of being an entrepreneur and a father. I'm interested in this book you did a while back now, Successful Mistake. So can you tell us what was involved with that? Because that was where you were sort of researching entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah. So I came up with that idea, again, just around the time what was talked about. So I left my job, learned George was coming into the world. The plan at the time was to kind of split my working time between writing, finishing my first novel, Beyond Parallel, and doing some kind of marketing consultancy. I didn't really know what it would envision when, but that's kind of loosely what I wanted to do. But I also wanted to write a nonfiction book. At the time, I wasn't exactly sure what it was going to be, but I started having these similar kind of conversations, just starting to work for myself. And everyone gravitated towards failure. And they would tell me stories about failure or mistakes they'd made or hardships that they had to overcome, but then would come out the other end and they were like huge life lessons. So I thought it would be interesting to just interview dozens upon dozens of successful people further down the road than me from various industries and ask them about what success looks like for them today and what their biggest failure was and how it led them to become the person they are. And the mirage of different sort of mistakes that intertwine with one another and form patterns. And each one was very different, yet a lot of them kind of ticked similar boxes. And it was just a common trait that every single person I spoke to could relate to. They were like, yeah, I failed. Yeah, I've made mistakes. Yeah, this journey is tough. And yes, the person I am today is very different to the person who I was when I first began. And it was something I could relate to at the time. It's something I can relate to even more now, being several years into the journey and having, you know, transitioned through different periods. So it brought up an entire new outlook on what being a business owner or an entrepreneur or someone who's self-employed like actually is. Again, removing that sort of rose-tinted perception that many of us have what it is before you get into it. And it also kind of threw me down the sort of mindset rabbit hole, the personal development rabbit hole, because everyone would tell me, you know, different things that they learned from their fails and mistakes, and it led them to learn about this, and that would lead them to learn about this. I found myself doing the same, going down this rabbit hole, learning about all the various different aspects that come into sort of mindset. And I realized that success is a hugely vague entity in our world. Like, we all have it. We all have this vague idea of pursuing success. And we think that we know what success is because we're led to believe it's A and B and C through our parents, through school, through the media, through society. But few of us, at least early on in our life, in our 20s, in our 30s, don't actually consciously dive into like what it means to us. We're just following it, assuming it's a car, assuming it's a house, assuming it's a salary, assuming it's a certain number. But what I was learning from all these people is that it's when they actually defined what success means to them, when a lot of the big changes began to happen. And yeah, that just threw me even further down the rabbit hole. And it was that rabbit hole ultimately that led to me writing my latest book, Beyond the Pale.
Okay. Well, 163 entrepreneurs, that's a random number, but yeah, a big number. Were there any particular stories in there that sort of stuck with you, or any that you could share with us that might be most relevant to this audience?
Yeah, well, certainly one comes to mind from Dan Miller. So I didn't interview every single one of them in person, but I think there was probably about 100, you know, interviews like the one we're having right now. And one of the big ones which stood out to me, and I think is definitely relevant in this case, is Dan Miller, because he's, for one, a family man, and he's a very keen family man. He's certainly got that great balance, that whole life balance, where his work and his personal endeavors are as one, you know, they're aligned. But it wasn't always the case. And I always remember Dan's journey, how he kind of went into a business following that version of success that we're all led to believe it is. You know, it wasn't particularly a business that he had a passion in or an interest in, but it looked good on paper. It certainly had the potential to bring in money. So he went for it. And one thing after another, a lot of us stuff out of his control. And I think a lot of us can relate to that in this current time, because life happens, and sometimes that happens for the better and sometimes it really doesn't. So it led to him basically just slipping into debt. I forget the exact number. It's a while since I wrote the book, but I think it was about $750,000 in debt. And he basically became bankrupt. Even though he could have taken other routes, it would have meant that he would have been leaving people high and dry, investors, suppliers, and the like. And he just couldn't live with himself for that. His values, his moral standing, he was like, I'm going to pay everyone back what I owe, even if it's going to take me the rest of my life. So for me, that was a big thing, because it really kind of showed that once you're kind of in tune with your values and you're in tune with like your purpose, it can help you make really difficult decisions. And I think we all like to believe we would do the right thing when times are tough. But it's so easy to not do the right thing when you're faced with $750,000 worth of debt and you're going to have to become bankrupt, and you're just going to face all the stresses and knowns for the remaining, well, put a number to it, 10 years, 20 years, the rest of your life. So yeah, it was interesting. And thankfully for Dan, he got a job, but he quickly realized that it wouldn't suffice. He would be having to work that job for the next 50 years, and he would probably still not be able to pay everyone back. So it led him to dive into the online world, and he tried one thing after another, made a bit more money. And it led to him building this empire, which he's very passionate about. It's very aligned with his skill set. And yeah, it's just completely different to the business he had, you know, pre-debt. But if it wasn't for that debt, he wouldn't be the person he is today. And yeah, his journey and his story was an inspiring one, to say the least.
Okay. And obviously that's this theme of sort of, overcoming adversity, failing, and then going on to succeed. That's the common theme throughout the book. But you mentioned you sort of learnt a lot about the mindset that it takes to be a successful entrepreneur. What were some of the sort of common traits in terms of mindset?
Well, going into writing that book, I knew of mindset, and I read about this in my current one, Beyond the Pale, where I think a lot of people are aware of mindset. But I realized during this time when I was writing and interviewing all these people that I didn't actually understand what it meant. It was a word I was familiar with and I assumed I knew, but I realized I had no idea whatsoever. But it was something which just kept on coming up again and again in these conversations with these people of varying success and wealth and fame and authority, and some people who were younger than me, around my age, much older, like Dan. And yeah, it was all about this sort of idea of outlook. It rarely comes down to skill and talent more than anything else. It's to do with, you know, just your sort of perseverance and persistence, and just not fearing failure, not fearing mistakes, not fearing adversity, seeing it as an opportunity to grow and to learn from. And anyone who's listening, who kind of has gone into the realm of mindset and start to learn about what it is, there's generally two types of mindset. There's a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And the fact is that the vast, vast majority of people are brought up with a fixed mindset. It's kind of how the educational system is set up. It's probably how your parents were brought up to believe. So in turn, they bring you up to do the same. So the vast majority of people out there in the world, unless they later in life consciously kind of unlearn what they learned, have a fixed mindset. And the whole idea of having a fixed mindset is that you are either good at something or you're not. So you try something and it's like, oh yeah, I've tried cooking, it's just not for me, I'm not any good. You know, some people are good at cooking, some people are not. I'm not one of them, so I'm not going to try. And that's a fixed mindset. You assume you have a certain set of skills and everything else is out of reach. Some people are good at it, some people aren't. And you just use it as an excuse your entire life. And it allows you to place blame onto others. And it just allows you to have a bit of a get out of jail free card, really. A growth mindset is going, okay, well, maybe some people are more naturally gifted at some things more than others. You know, some athletes, for instance, are very naturally gifted at what they do, whether it's a physical attribute or a more technical one. But for the most part, if you are committed and you are willing to learn and you are willing to make mistakes and you are willing to be patient and be open-minded, that you can improve in almost anything. And you can just, through an iterative process, go from A to B and then on to C and onwards. And that's a growth mindset. And I now realize that my entire life, I had a very fixed mindset in most instances. And it's not black and white. You can be more growth oriented in certain scenarios, more fixed in others. But in general, I was very fixed. And my natural default now, when times are tough, and this is a perfect example, being in lockdown, everything that's going on in the pandemic, is to kind of divert back to fixed. You know, life is black or white. It is or it isn't. It's good or it's bad. And it is just not true. So, and what I learned from interviewing all these people is that they had, by and large, growth mindsets, or they were actively and consciously always trying to work on their growth mindset. It's not to say they're always a growth mindset. I would say most of them, like everyone else, they were fixed forever. But then they started to learn all these things that we learn as along the entrepreneurial journey and through making mistakes. And you start to pick up certain things and you start to realize, actually, if I'm going to last at this, I need to learn how to fail. I need to learn how to overcome adversity. I need to learn how to get better at something. And that's not to say that you will always do everything. Delegation is really important, but it's this aspect of you can do something if you put your mind to it. You can improve if you commit to the cause, if you're willing to commit yourself to the journey. You can overcome adversity even when times feel bleak. It's a choice to be either fixed or growth. It's a choice none of us were really given in our younger days, because you just know what you know and you're delivered information from people. You don't get a choice there. But as you get older, you can choose whether to remain fixed or to pursue growth. And it's not easy to do so, but it's a key fundamental aspect of, you know, success, whatever success means to you.
Amazing. And so the fact you've sort of consciously developed this mindset yourself, or you continue to try and work on that in your own mindset. What about from a parenting point of view? Because you mentioned that most of us have a fixed mindset, partly because that's what was, I guess, programmed into us by our parents and probably by their parents. So as fathers, what sort of things could we be doing, or what are you doing to sort of help your kids hopefully develop a growth mindset from a younger age?
It's so hard, right? And it's especially hard now because, let's face it, the last year has thrown a lot of craziness our way. So it's easy to say something, it's another thing to do things when you're trying to juggle all these balls. But so yeah, it's certainly been made harder. I've certainly struggled with it more over the last year. But as I was learning all this, I was in fact, I found it easier to relate, come at it from a father's perspective than a personal one, because as I started to learn all these things, I was a new father. You know, I was doing these interviews when George was like 3 months old, 6 months old, 1 year old. I was writing the book when he was, you know, an infant. So I was learning all these things and I was like, I want to learn this for me because I want to, you know, live to the end of my days as a better, more rounded human being. I want to be growth. I don't want to be fixed. I want to be growth because that's surely going to bring me more purpose and I'm going to be more content with that. But more importantly, I wanted to do it as a father because I want to give George and I want to give Imogen as many positive tools to work from as possible. I have so little control over so much, including them. Like, they're at school, they're learning from teachers, they're learning from my mom, they're learning from friends, they're learning from other people, they're learning from the media. So I can't control them. I can't dictate who they become, what they become, how they become. But I do play a very important role as a father. I play a truly fundamental role in their development as people. And I get to have a choice as their father to just be unconscious and to just go through the motions and just share with them what comes natural and not overthink it and just admit defeat. Or I can consciously be thinking, no, like, based on what I've learned on mindset and everything else that comes into it over the last few years, what lessons can I pass on to them now? Proactively trying to just feed them things ongoing, you know, bring greater routine, but also reactively, you know, if a situation comes and they've made a mistake or they've got angry or they've done something stupid and I'm about to yell, like, how can I approach this in a growth-oriented way? So that's just kind of how I do it. And it leads me to, especially with George, it's a bit harder with Imogen. She's three, so she's still very young. It's hard to have rational conversations with a three-year-old, I'm sure, you know. But with George, especially now, I'm able to, you know, talk to certain things with him. And there's been a lot of things which have happened over the last year around race and things like that. And I'm like, no, can I have more of a conversation? Can I explain things better to him? Can I have more of a dialogue? When we take on something new, he's started to get into sport. I'm always talking about him. You know, all that matters is effort. It doesn't matter if you make mistakes. It doesn't matter whether you're very good at something or not. It's about listening, because that's, if you listen to your coach and you're open to learning, that's good. Have fun, you know, just enjoy the journey and put in effort. Just give it your all. If you put in effort, that's all I care about. And that, for me, those are three fundamental things that we can all take in every aspect of life. Be open-minded, listening. So listening and observe and learn from those who are in a position of authority from you, because you can learn a lot from them. Have fun in the sense of just enjoy the journey. Don't worry if things aren't necessarily that great. If you're not very good at something, just find fun in the journey, and then, you know, effort over outcome. It doesn't matter about the result. It's about putting in the effort. And if you commit to those three things over a period of time, you will get better. Now, in George's case, around football or rugby, does it or does it not matter whether he becomes good or very good or great or average? Not really. Unless he wants to pursue a career as a rugby player, it doesn't matter whether he becomes great or average. It's about the other things that come into it, you know, leadership, teamwork, and just trying different things so he can do it. And I think you can come at it from a fixed mindset of like, oh, you're either good at rugby or you're not. Oh, you're not very good, so just quit. Or you can come at it from a growth and be like, no, just get as much from this experience for as long as possible, and then you can move on to something else, and you can make better decisions as a 12-year-old, as a 14-year-old, as a 20-year-old. So I'm just hoping that by taking that approach through sport, through his studies, through pretty much everything, his interests, it's just giving him more tools to work from later in life, hoping that a few things will stick. And I've just recently trying to do that more now with finances. There's like this app where I can put money onto a card for him, but he has to do his chores. And I'm trying to, he's getting to an age now where I want to give him more authority over his finances. And I want him to grow up with more of an investment mindset, more of a sort of proactive how to be smarter with money rather than just saving and doing this and the way I was brought up. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, that's really, really cool and really good advice in there. Obviously, you've read a lot on the topic and you've written on it. And there are a bunch of books that I'm aware of that have sort of spawned from this concept of mindset and different takes on it. But for the listeners out there, what are some of the, I guess, key books or resources that have sort of influenced you in terms of this area of mindset?
Well, it's a tricky one, because there's the science behind mindset. So mindset in and of itself is like a topic. It's an actual area of research. So there's things to learn from mindset. So if you want to learn about the sort of fundamentals of mindset, what it is, you know, like how it kind of works, how it comes together, Carol Dweck's book Mindset is just a fantastic book to begin with. It is textbook, it is an academic book, so it's not the easiest of read at times, but it gives you that fundamental knowledge of what mindset is, why it's important, how it works. Then there's mindset that is the rabbit hole. So mindset is, at least it was for me, it's an introductory 101 into what comes next. Because it starts to force you to think and question your own life and your own beliefs and your own methods, how you act, how you react, in a completely different light. So you start to realize how flawed you are, which is good, because we all are flawed. We all are human. And it just leads you to learn about greater things from there. So what your rabbit hole looks like, it will look inevitably different to mine. For me, the next step was I started to learn about habit formation. I always bite my nails, and I was like, and I approach certain things in certain ways with reactions, you know, regarding like the fixed mindset outlook. So I started to wonder, like, why is that? Why do I always resort to this kind of behavior, this kind of reaction? Why do I bite my nails? Why do I worry? Because I've always been a bit of a natural worrier. I've always suffered with anxiety. So it's like, where does that come from? So it led me to habit formation and how we build habits, how we can break habits, the fundamental role habits play in our decision making and how we live our lives. And that in itself led me into further areas, you know, from flow and how the relationship between mind, body and spirit. And so many things. Yeah, it's it all kind of fits under the umbrella of personal development.
Yeah,
and that's why when I hear someone say, "Oh, I want to create a self-help book or a personal development book," I'm just like, "What does that even mean?" It's like to say, so "I want to write fiction." It's so broad, and mindset is a specific area, but for me, it's also one of those introductory things into the grander realm of personal development. But it's where it takes you, and I think everyone's journey thereafter is slightly different.
Yep.
But mindset's a great starting point because it just forces you to look at yourself,
yep,
how you act, how you react, how you think. And it just opens your eyes and makes you aware of like, damn, like, oh my God, I don't want to be like that. So you learn and it takes you into some interesting stuff.
Yep. No, I agree with that. So I'll put a link to that book by Carol Dweck in the show notes for anyone who wants to check that out. You're right. It is a bit of a dry read, so you want to spread it out over a while, but it gives you the basis of what growth mindset and fixed mindset is all about.
Another good one that I'll just kind of touch upon, which isn't quite as dry, and it's The Code of the Extraordinary Mind by Vishen Lakhani, who's the man behind Mind Valley, which is a fantastic sort of organization and community. And it's not necessarily a, you know, a quote unquote mindset book, but it's very mindset oriented, a bit more practical. So if you're wanting something a bit more practical, that will still give you a great insight into like mindset. The Code of the Extraordinary Mind is good. Mm-hmm. But anyone who wants to learn about mindset, I think at some point probably needs to read Carol's book because it just gives you so much information that is necessary. It should be a school book. It really should.
It's the Bible of mindset. And luckily she grabbed the name, or at least the names most associated with her book, Mindset. So, like I say, I'll include links to both of those books. And what about your new book or your latest book? I think it's coming out shortly, another business book, but with a bit of a twist. What's that one about?
So it's called Beyond the Pale, and it's a work of fiction. So it's a novel, but it's very, very nonfiction too. It's basically a fable, an allegory. So the best way to describe it is it's like a modern version of The Alchemist for the millennial generation. I think The Alchemist I use that reference it a lot because it's a book many entrepreneurs read. But when I speak to entrepreneurs and business owners and people who work for themselves and say, do you read fiction? They quite often go, no, I don't have time for that. So The Alchemist tends to be a popular book for the entrepreneurial community. Fiction isn't. And I am a big believer that entrepreneurs need to read more works of fiction. They need to read less how-to books, less self-help books, including The Success Mistake, funnily enough. It's a kind of book which can be helpful, but I think there's just too many of those books. There's too many people. Like, we just end up consuming for the sake of consuming. We just read and read and read and hoping it's going to like change things. And we tend to turn towards those business books, those how-to books, those self-help books. And if you're wanting to learn something very specific, that's good. They can teach you, but a lot of the times you will get everything you need within like 10 pages. And if you want to learn something like that, there's better ways to learn than reading, quite frankly, these days, through like video courses and online courses and hiring a coach or a mentor. Books should be used as more of a sort of an inspiration, a kickstart. So if you're wanting to learn something specific, as we mentioned, like mindset, then a book like that can be really good to give you some fundamental knowledge. But to just constantly read those kind of books for the sake of it is a waste of everyone's time, in my opinion. So I always had this dream of one day writing a book which kind of combined my fiction and nonfiction ways. And thankfully, I did that with Beyond the Pale. It's as I say, a work of fiction. It follows the lead character, Ferdinand, who's a very typical Silicon Valley success story. Fast track to, you know, fame and authority and just everything I think which most people aspire toward. But it quickly shows the reader that his life isn't as perky as probably everyone assumes. On the outside looking in, if he's successful, he assumed he was successful. But once a few people started asking the right questions, he realized that he was quite unhappy and not quite as content as he thought he was. And it leads him on a journey of, well, the exact kind of rabbit hole we talked about. He learns about mindset, which leads into the next thing and the next thing. So he kind of travels the world, meeting a bunch of people, people who I personally interviewed in real life, which is where the nonfiction side of things come in. It does touch upon topics, including mindset and a lot of the things which we've kind of briefly touched upon in this conversation. People who have personally inspired me on my journey. So their characters, like their real life characters, appear in books. So it's a book that is a fictional tale, but very much set in a real world. And yeah, he, over the course of the book, learns about what success means to him, starts to define success on his terms. And yeah, piece by piece, he starts stripping away the onion that, you know, has hidden his true self for so long. So yeah, a business fable, which I hope will inspire a few people.
No, it sounds, I mean, you say, as you say, a fictional story, but probably a familiar story for a lot of those Silicon Valley entrepreneurs that you've based it on. So an easy way to consume something with a lesson in it as well. So it sounds brilliant, Matthew. I'll definitely check it out. Is it what stage is that? Is it available now, or how can listeners get a copy?
So your best bet is to go to beyondbook.co. So beyondbook.co. And depending on when you're listening to this, it may still be coming soon, or it may be out. But that website will link to the various guises. I mean, at this moment in time, and you'll be able to download a free sample of the book, the first couple of chapters. So that's kind of what I'm encouraging people to do, to get a feel for whether it's a book for them. And then once you're on that list, you'll get notified of when the book's out. It's set to come out in the bookstores. It's being published by Morgan James. August 24th, I think, is the official release date. We should be doing a soft launch for the book in May. But beyondbook.co gives you a link to everything you'll need about the book. It gives you an insight into what the book is, more about me, all that good stuff.
No, that's fantastic, Matthew. So I'll put a link to that. And turndog.co is the other website where you can read a bit more about Matthew and his books. And you can see his very sort of hipster bohemian moustache that you've got there. Are you still sporting that the moustache? Has that made it through lockdown?
It is. It's a bit more of a trimmed version. Yeah, the motivation to like twizzle it and get it looking perfect just is not there while we don't leave the house. So the mustache is there, but it's not quite as fancy and free. And yeah, who knows? Maybe when we're allowed back into the open public, it'll return in its full force. We'll see.
Good idea, Matthew. Thanks so much for coming on the Dad Train and having a chat. And all the best with that new novel, getting that live, and whatever other projects you have down the track. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
That was another episode of the Dad Train podcast. I hope you enjoyed that discussion and learned something new. You can find the show notes for this and all previous episodes at thedadtrain.com/podcast. If you're enjoying the show and you'd like to support it, please leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you're able to, and spread the word to other dads who may be interested. If you'd like to learn more or to get in touch, you can visit the website, which is thedadtrain.com, or follow me on social media at thedadtrain. Thanks for listening to the show. I do really appreciate your support. I'll be back next week with another episode, but until then, good luck on your journey to be a better man, a better partner, and a better dad. I'm Scott Davison, and you've been listening to The Dad Train.